Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Garden State of Hockey podcast. Wow, it's been a month since we last spoke with you, and I mean, not with each other directly, but definitely about the Devils, because there's honestly been very little happening. It's that August dog days doldrum kind of deal in the NHL season where there are some minor things we can catch up on, but mainly we wanted to come to you with this episode to check back in with you, to let you know what's coming for the New Jersey Devils in a few weeks here, and to get ready for the start of the season, in addition to some site news that we have to recap here. So my name is Dan Rozelle, and I'm joined as always by John Fisher. Hey, John.
Hello.
John, it's been a busy August for the site, even though it hasn't been a busy August for the Devils. Are there any, you know, things in particular you want to highlight of the content from AATJ, you know, for the month of August? Since I know we had talked about the assistant coaches that the Devils got. I know there's a lot of articles about their history, what they'll bring to the team. But anything else that you feel is worth mentioning? Because honestly, not a lot happened in the last month.
Well, I did write way too many words about the various playoff droughts that almost every NHL team has ever suffered, to try to pick out lessons, because this may surprise you, Dan, the Devils are in a playoff drought right now. And it might be worth understanding, like looking at history, that, you know, there's not one correct way to get out of a playoff drought. In terms of major lessons learned. And again, I wrote a lot about this, so I encourage everybody to go take some time to read through it. But the two major lessons are, one, ownership really does drive a lot of this, because you'd be surprised how many of these playoff drafts were driven by ownership issues, whether it's an owner that doesn't want to be an owner anymore, an owner that doesn't have any money, an owner passing away, ownership basically causing, you know, wanting other people in charge, and, you know, their power struggles behind the scenes that lead to bizarre decisions. You know, I think it wasn't that long ago when, you know, ownership split up in Tampa Bay because Owen Cools wanted to trade Vincent LeCavalier, and Glenn Barry finally said enough. And Gary Bettman had to step in and say, you guys can't be owners anymore. You
it is enough. This out. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, and even in more benign cases where Ted Leonis basically said, yeah, we can't win with a $77 million contract to Jaromir Jagr. Let's tear it down. And that's how they eventually ended up with Alex Ovechkin. And yes, they did give Jagr $77 million back in after that infamous trade that brought him to the Capitals. But the larger point is that ownership really does drive everything from the top down. So if ownership has issues and they can't provide the resources, or they pick the wrong people to be your general manager and your team president and other leadership positions, that's going to cause problems down to the team level. And it happens so many times in NHL history, and it even happened to the Devils and their longest playoff drought of 9 years, where the Rockies were changed hands something like four times before they ended up to John McMullen. And then it came to, well, John McMullen kept picking the wrong guys and ultimately found, well, let me take a chance on this college guy named Lamorello. And it turns out when you hire the right people, it works out much better.
And this week marked the anniversary of that hire as well. I think I saw one of these on this day. What was 35 years ago the Devils hired Lou?
Yep. 1986, I believe, is the year.
It'll be 87, yeah, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So that's that. The other major lesson, and there's a whole bunch of lessons, but the major one, that the ownership is the first one. The second one is, and I'm going to say this very carefully, so everybody pay attention, because this is not just a hockey lesson, Dan. This is a basketball lesson. This is a baseball lesson. This is a football lesson.
It's called life. Why not?
It's called life. Yeah. I want to say soccer, but you and I both know soccer doesn't work the same way in this regard. It is, quote, do not buy into the process, the cycle, the you know, the concept that you're in a playoff drought because you've had success and you're paying for that success. Mm-hmm. Not all droughts are the same. And more importantly, the results are absolutely not the same, because a lot of fans have put a lot of hope looking at Pittsburgh and Chicago saying, well, they were really awful. They drafted really well, and therefore they became really, really good. That's only part of the story. Though Chicago does not win a Stanley Cup shortly after drafting Patrick Kane if they didn't have trades and signings like getting Marian Hossa or Martin Havlat or Nikolai Hobby-Bullet or Chris Kawhi or Antti Niemi and a whole host of other decisions that I could point out to in Chicago. Pittsburgh absolutely is not a contender for the better part of the last 15 years if they weren't relying on their pro scouts and their amateur scouts for undrafted mm-hmm. free agents, making really bold trades and still kicking on, even with Crosby getting up there in age and Malkin turning into a half-season superstar.
People forget how much these teams had to retool. Like, yeah, it's nice to have that nucleus, but again, you have to build around it. Some of these players are going to leave, take more money elsewhere. You have to make trades that look undesirable but end up working out really great. And again, it's two sides of this. Do you want to be post-Gretzky Edmonton, where they get pick after pick after pick and they bought him out and yeah, they have the best player in the world, but has it gotten them anything just yet? Or would you rather be Colorado? They bottomed out. They even bottomed out with their best player, and then it all turned around and the right pieces came together at the right time as the core grew together.
And I'm glad you mentioned Colorado, Dan, because one of the other things I wrote, and I'm patting myself on the back a little bit for this one, because related to the lessons learned, you know, I did a quick post about, you know, how were the Devils championship teams built? And I included the 2012 team, you know, just to show like, yes, you need to draft well, but you also need to have good free agent decisions and good trade decisions and picking the right coaches. You need all of this. You can't just have one of it. You know, so those who are saying, you know, you got to draft well. Yes, you do, but you got to do other things too. Mm-hmm. The Colorado Avalanche, Dan, while their core is mostly drafted, you know, MacKinnon, Ratanen, who was picked after Pavel Zacha,
Landeskog,
infamously, Landeskog was McCarr. Drafted second overall. McCarr was fourth overall in his draft year. But here's the thing, Dan, those four players we just mentioned, that's it. They've only had six drafted players on that championship roster. And, you know, no disrespect to Bowen Byram. He averaged over 19 minutes per game. So credit to him. And Alex Newhook is on the come up. So there you go. But that's six guys out of 23, you know. Darcy Kemper and Pavel Francouz were a trade and an undrafted free agent, respectively. Valeri Nichushkin was a free agent signing. Nazem Kadri was, you know, acquired in a big trade with Toronto a couple years back. So much of that roster was acquired through other means outside of the draft. And it wasn't like Colorado was so good at drafting that they were able to pull their draft capital otherwise. Like, unless you think really highly of Tyson Jost, which I don't know who does. But the larger point here, Dan, is that being a good GM and putting together a contender, there's no one, you know, magic rule or golden rule to follow. And it goes back to what I said about the process. You know, I included this infamous clip from the Edmonton Oilers of Craig McTavish and Kevin Lowe, both guys who played with Gretzky and even after Gretzky in Edmonton, won a whole bunch of cups, being challenged for once by the media to say, you know, because they're going on about saying the same things that you and I would say is, oh, you know, you've been really good for a while, so you got to be bad. You're paying the price for that. And that was regarding to a 2006 cup run that was seven seasons before the video was taken. Yeah. So 7 years later, a media guy's like, it's been seven seasons. And Kevin gets huffy saying, you know, I know a little something about winning. And it's like, bro, it's been 7 years. You've had these top picks. You had the ability to sign lots of guys. You have stable ownership in Edmonton. It's you, dude. It's you.
We know the turnaround can be very, very quick, both in the positive and negative direction, too.
Yeah. And likewise, some organizations like Boston and Montreal, they just don't miss the playoffs for very long. The Boston Bruins had one 8-season drought, which was ended legendarily by, you know, the emergence of Bobby Orr and the big trade for Phil Esposito and Ken Hodge. But since that 8-season playoff drought, Dan, they've never missed the playoffs more than two times in a row since 1968, and they've only missed the playoffs a total of 7 times since 1968. Montreal, on the other hand, they've never had a drought longer than 3 seasons. That might change now, but then again, a lot of people thought the same way in 2018, and then they, you know, magically got into the return to play format, won their qualifier against Pittsburgh, and then the following year they, you know, on the edge of a knife, made the playoffs, upset Toronto in the first round to much laughter and delight to the hockey world, and then went on a playoff run that seemingly iced Bergevin's job and Dominique Ducharme's job before they both got fired. So, you know, lots can change quickly. But the point is that some organizations, even old organizations like Montreal and Boston, you know, they constantly retool. They're constantly reloading. Their ownership does not expect anything less than success. Even if you want to call them mediocre or just okay, they're in the mix more often mm-hmm. than not. So this notion that there's a cycle where you're good and then you have to be bad and then you're good and then you have to be bad, that's not true. And anybody who believes that, whether you're a fan, a broadcaster, a pundit, a hockey blogger, a hockey podcaster, or in the case of Craig McTavish and Kevin Lowe, actual quote-unquote hockey men, mm-hmm. it's not true. It's not true. Stop accepting failures.
And at this point, you know, after winning, I'm going to put it in quotes. I mean, it's air quotes always every time we say it. But after winning the offseason all the time, don't you want to see it manifest at least once? Like, I understand exactly. If it's a kind of thing where you can tell that the team is punting the offseason to maybe try and arrange for a tank and increase their draft position. But the Devils haven't done that. They've tried to improve the last 3 seasons. And for one reason or another, it hasn't gone well. So it's time. Yeah. It's time to make that work.
The time to make it work was 2 seasons ago or last season.
It's overdue time. But let's just say... But let's just say the world situation 2 seasons ago and a season ago, while tough for everyone, was particularly difficult on the Devils. And there's no reason in particular that happened, but just seems that they got Murphy's Law 2 years in a row. But that being said, hopefully the drought ends here. Hopefully they can get this core going. And it's tough because the division only got better. I think we had some posts about how different teams around the division improved, got better or worse. I know there's some other blogs that did so as well. So the Metropolitan should be an interesting one to follow. What else do we have in terms of articles on the site? Obviously, we talked goaltending. What will happen? What is the Devils' potential if their goaltending holds? These are all things you can find mentioned on our website for sure.
Certainly. And there have been, and as preseason is getting closer and closer, because it is less than a month away now. You know, Steven wrote about potential PTO targets, which I personally don't think there's going to be too many of. The Devils kind of have a full roster as it is between Utica and New Jersey and other available prospects.
And Jimmy Vesey ain't coming back. He's a Ranger again.
Yep. He signed a PTO with our hated rivals. Zach Aston Reese signed a PTO with Toronto. The main purpose of these PTOs is also just to fill roster spots for your preseason games.
Yep.
Because by, I think, NHL rule, you have to have at least 8 veterans in a game for preseason. And understandably, for those first couple preseason games, you may not want to put, you know, your top players in right away because they've only had a week of camp. Or in the Devils' case, less than a week of camp. They start, their preseason starts 6 days after the veterans report. But I don't think the Devils are in that situation. The roster is pretty hefty in terms of a lot of guys are going to compete for very few spots.
Oh yeah.
Some transactions are made by Mr. Fitzgerald over the next couple of weeks, which I highly doubt is going to happen. That might happen. If there's anything, that might happen closer to the beginning of the actual season on October 13th, which is almost a month away, Dan. We're very close. We're very, very close. But Dan, one of the things that I recently posted, which is relevant to the upcoming season, is the national broadcast schedule. Our friends at Disney Disney and Warner Brothers Discovery, by the way, if you have any money, you might want to send it WBD's way, because apparently they don't have any, because they're cutting everything left and right. Mm-hmm. But they put out press releases back on Tuesday to announce their different broadcast schedules. Disney, of course, owns ABC, ESPN, and ESPN Plus/Hulu. Warner Brothers and Discovery, they own TNT. I could say the Devils are having a couple more national televised games. Let me quickly run it down here, Dan. I want you to tell me what you noticed that what they all have in common.
Sure thing.
All right. So for the ESPN slate, there are seven games. The first five are on ESPN Plus. So, you know, pray for no Leia. October 13th, the home season opener, I should say, Devils at Philadelphia. That'll be John Tortorella's first game that was actually highlighted in the press release. Mm-hmm. October 20th, Devils at Islanders. Tuesday, January 10th, Devils at Carolina. Friday, January 13th, Devils at Anaheim. And this was the other game highlighted in the press release, because it's they highlighted that it's going to be Jack Hughes versus Trevor Zegras. So you can already hear that the people at Disney, the decision makers, the deciders, if you will, mm-hmm. believe that the big deal is a big deal, Dan.
Well, that's good. Right. I hope so.
Valentine's Day, Devils at Columbus. Yes, get ready to have your heart broken by Johnny Gaudreau on Valentine's Day. I hate it. February
16th. So annoying that they would do that.
Yep. February 16th, Devils at St. Louis. And then April Fool's Day, Devils at Chicago. That's your seven games on the Disney slate of networks. The last two are on ESPN television. The St. Louis game is going to be on ESPN. The Chicago game is going to be on ESPN too.
John, that's interesting. You said a lot of times.
But wait, Dan, there's more.
There's more?
There's more, because, again, there's the Turner slate.
Surely they can't both be at.
Well, Dan, I regret to tell you that they are.
Surely not, John.
Devils at Florida on December 21st and Devils mm-hmm. at Detroit on January 4th.
They get some national coverage this year, some more than they got last year. That's due to the emergence of Jack Hughes, and also it doesn't hurt that he's American, and also it doesn't hurt that he's friends with Trevor Zegras, who is the new media darling of the NHL. And again, it makes sense that they have more games. He did manage to emerge and make a name for himself more than he already had, but they're all on the road. There's some sort of weird moratorium about filming inside the Prudential Center suddenly. And so the Devils will be in their road uniforms for every single nationally televised game, which kind of stinks, to be honest with you, unless they happen to be wearing the black jerseys in one of those games, or maybe some reverse retro.
That's right. The reverse retros are coming.
We're back. We're back in the green. Well, actually, we may not be back in the green. The rumors have it that they're going to take on colors from the Kansas City Scouts part of the franchise.
The yellow red. The 2 years of Kansas City where they were terrible and jumped ship to Colorado immediately.
We were all there. We all remember it fondly when they won like 17 games that one season. That was really awesome. I don't really get that, but we'll see what happens when the actual jersey comes out. Maybe it'll look better than I think. Regardless, they're going to be on the road for all seven of those games. Interesting choice, to say the least, but whatever, it's fine. At least they get the coverage. At least they get to play on the national stage a little bit, get used to having a lot of eyes on them. You want to get used to that kind of audience when you're playing in the playoffs. So all power to them.
Well, again, you know, if you're a season ticket holder like myself, at least you can feel good that you don't have to wonder if you're not going to see Ken Danico and the new Devils play-by-play announcer that we talked about him last time.
Bill Spaulding.
Yes, Bill Spaulding. I blanked on his name. Once mm-hmm. I start hearing him regularly, I will commit his name to better memory. Yep. Bill Spaulding of many, many talents, caller of track and field, hockey, football, fencing, downhill skiing. You need a versatile man.
I just need a clip man. You saying football every time we talk about football from now on.
Football. You could thank Bob Davey of College Football Fame for that, because he actually just calls it football. In any case, though, speaking of college football, Dan.
Oh?
Michigan is known for its college football. But Michigan wow. is also known for its hockey.
Nice.
Michigan is known for a lot of collegiate success. I'm not going to say they're at the level of UCLA where they can claim over 100 national championships mm-hmm. in various different sports here. However, if you're a college athlete and you don't mind being in Ann Arbor, and as long as you're not being recruited by Rutgers for football or basketball, you might consider Michigan as a destination, especially if you're a hockey player, mm-hmm. as they have been loaded with talent in recent years. And Dan, they announced their leadership group. Who is yeah, among that leadership group, Dan?
One of those leaders that is announced for that leadership group is someone who happened to break the record for most points by a freshman in Michigan history, I believe. And his name is Luke Hughes. So Luke Hughes is an assistant captain for the team. We love to see it. We love to see him getting leadership roles. We love to see him breaking records. We love pretty much everything about him so far. And we're looking forward to seeing how he spends this year captaining or assistant captaining the Michigan team. It's really, really cool that he gets this opportunity. And honestly, I think it's very likely that, you know, depending on how the season shakes out, both the Devils and Michigan's, there's a strong possibility we'll see him up with the team in the final stretches of the season.
Yeah, it's going to depend on how well Michigan does, obviously, and the situation with the Devils. Because, you know, the last thing you want to do is, you know, throw a guy, especially a defenseman, immediately in after college. But yeah. It could happen. But, yeah, credit to Luke Hughes, because being a captain on a college team, especially, Dan, speaks to a player's character. It speaks to a player's it speaks to the team's value of the player. It speaks mm-hmm. to that this is a guy that you want to go to when times are tough or you're an inexperienced player. You go to him to get an understanding of what you should do. So the criticism of it in his draft class about his character continues to take blows, Dan, body blows, as if it was a UFC fight. The hater and loser of Luke Hughes, of which there is one, continues to take L's. Credit to Luke Hughes and the Michigan squad for doing so. And this will be a big opportunity for a big season for Luke Hughes at Michigan. Like his older brother, Quinn, he's following Quinn's path of two seasons before going to the NHL. Mm-hmm. Without Owen Power, without Matty Beniers, because it looks like they've already signed with Buffalo and Seattle respectively. It's Luke's team effectively. You know, he's going to be the top defenseman. Or at least he should be the top defenseman. He should be one of the major players on offense, along with guys like, and I'm going off memory here, so I apologize if I get this wrong, like a Thomas Borlaug. I'm trying to think who else is on the Michigan team that, because I almost said Matty Beniers and Ken Johnson might make Columbus, though.
Yeah, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, another reason to not look forward to that Valentine's Day game. You might get to see Johnny Gaudreau feed video game-like player Kent Johnson, for feeds. Yeah. He'll be screaming, "You forgot, I don't have to be Oliver Bjorkstrand to disappoint you."
I mean, yeah, as recently as last year, Power was there. He's out now, so that's something. It's a team that expects a lot, so they naturally expect a lot from their leadership.
Right. And it's also a team with a new look, too, because of a past behind the scenes issue involving Mel Pearson. He's been out, understandably so. So there's a new head coach. And again, with Michigan, given the amount of talent, the fact they continue to recruit top future NHL talent to their organization, the expectation is compete for a national championship. It's not enough to just win the Big Ten, which is still not an easy thing to do, considering the other teams in that conference, but hey,
go. It wouldn't mean anything if it was easy.
Of course not. It that's exactly the correct stance to take. If it was easy, it wouldn't be worth talking about.
Mm-hmm. All right. So as Luke Hughes continues to do that, we should expect to see, given that kind of development, Luke appear on a different list that we do annually here at AATJ. And again, this list, you're all very familiar with it. We're not going to go into detail about it today because it's almost done being released. So we're going to cover it almost in full, pretty much in full, because you can make some assumptions about the top five, probably in our next episode. But that list is the top 25 players under 25, of which Luke Hughes is certainly on there, and many players that you know and certainly hope to love one day as parts of the New Jersey Devils.
Absolutely. In fact, Luke Hughes' teammate, Ethan Edwards, just barely missed out on the top 25. Mm-hmm. So there's your tease for the next episode.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, we'll break down all the players that made it, the players who were close but didn't quite make it. A lot of new names on the list, obviously, with all the draft picks the Devils had this year, and then a lot of names departing through various transactions or just aging out of the process. So we'll be sure to cover that next week and really highlight anything that we might miss in this upcoming week. In terms of Devils housekeeping, that's really all I had on my plate. How about you?
That is pretty much it. The only thing I do want to give a special mention to is that recently, I want to say Thursday, or was it Thursday? Right. More recently, the USA Hockey Hall of Fame class has announced their 2022 group. The class is being led by Ryan Miller, who, believe it or not, has won more games than any other American goaltender in NHL history. So
actually a great trivia fact.
Great fact. Paralympic gold medal winner Steve Cash is part of the group. If you're into women's hockey, you know these two incredibly well, the Lamoureux twins. They've won a heap of medals and awards and accolades in the women's game. So credit to Jocelyn Lamoureux and Monique Lamoureux. And of course, speaking of Olympians, the late Jim Johansson, he was an Olympian. He's been in hockey as an executive for an incredibly long time. Mm-hmm. He unfortunately passed away with heart disease at the age of 53 back in 2018. So this is a posthumous ceremony, but he was one of the people that helped launch the developmental model that became the United States National Team Developmental Program, and securing an arena in Plymouth, Michigan as a base for those teams. So credit to him for the rise of American hockey, so to speak. So that's going to be the group. I believe I'm trying to see. Yeah, they're going to announce it. The actual induction is going to be in November. Mm-hmm. And it's actually the 50th class of the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame. So it is also another milestone for that. The only other thing I got to mention, Dan, is that the Devils are celebrating their 40th season. And so they basically took the Binghamton logo, replaced that devil head with the number 40. And it's going to be on their pucks, among other things. I'm sure they'll sell T-shirts or hats with it, you know. Oh, one last bit. Speaking of hats, did you want the hat, Dan?
The hat? Absolutely. I want the hat.
Too bad. They're not making any more of them.
Sad. sad news, but hey, I can totally see that as a fundraiser for some for a limited run of those anytime they want to. We mock the merchandise at first, but honestly they sold like crazy. These jerseys ended up growing a lot on people, I think, and became a little bit endearing by the end. Admit it, you have a soft spot for them in your heart.
Whatever.
As John looks to discover joy at some point here, we'll sign off for this episode and look forward to the next one when we talk about the top 25 under 25. And as always, thank you for listening. Thank you for joining us. And thank you for braving the offseason. I know it wasn't easy to not talk or really see much hockey for a long time here, but we're in the home stretch. You're going to see some people playing hockey in Devils uniforms very, very soon. All right. With that, like I said, thank you for listening, and let's go Devils. See you next time.